by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist with the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside, and Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters. Our topic today is Community Foundations Week in southeastern Wisconsin. My guests are Jane Harrington Heide, who is the interim executive director of the Kenosha Community Foundation, and Ken Fellman, president of the board of directors of the Kenosha Community Foundation. And besides volunteering his time for that, Ken is a senior vice president of Johnson Bank. Also joining us is Tom Clark, who, with his wife, has established the Clark Barber Fund at the foundation. He will be telling us how easy it was and why they did it. Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Jane, we're in the midst of National Community Foundation Week, which began 2 days ago and continues through Wednesday. There are community foundations that actually serve everyone in the signal area of this radio station. Tell us, in general, what are the more than 700 community foundations around the country, and why do you celebrate this week? Please give us a quick overview of the mission of community foundations, which are, I don't know if our listeners know, community foundations are really an incredibly special subset of the not-for-profit community benefit sector. Jane?
Well, first of all, Community Foundations Week was instituted in 1989 by President George H.W. Bush. And the focus of Community Foundations Week is to raise awareness of the increasingly important role that public charities play in our community in fostering local collaboration and innovation to address needs in our not-for-profit community and thus the clients that they serve. The first community foundation was created in 1914 in Cleveland, Ohio, by a gentleman by the name of Frederick Goff. And that was to benefit citizens in Cleveland, Ohio. Our foundation here in Kenosha was established in 1926. Actually, at that time, there were only two other foundations in the state of Wisconsin, one in Milwaukee and one in Madison. So the founding members of our foundation were very forward-looking at that time. At that time, we were called the Kenosha Foundation. And then in the 1950s, we reorganized and were known as the Greater Kenosha Area Foundation. And then in the 1990s, to identify us as a member of community foundations, we then became the Kenosha Community Foundation. To just take a step back, though, what is an actual community foundation? At its core, it's a public charity that focuses on supporting a geographic region. And we do that by facilitating and pooling donations, again, to address needs in our community that are provided by local not-for-profits. The types of grants that we make may come through donor-advised funds, endowments, scholarships, field of interest funds, giving circles. And those donors come from individual sources, organizations, and businesses, and sometimes even government entities. Just to give you a few little tidbits about community foundations worldwide, every continent but Antarctica has a community foundation. And it's estimated that actually the growth of community foundations now in the United States has grown to over 1,000. A statistic back from 2015, Indiana has the highest number of community foundations at 76. So we got to figure out what they're doing there, what they're doing well.
It's in the water.
Iowa, I'd say it was in the corn, but this is Indiana. And total giving by community foundations back, the most recent number I have was back from 2016, was nearly $7 billion. So they have a great impact on the ability for us to support our communities. So that gives you some idea as to just historic nature of community foundations in general, and then specifically our focus as a local community foundation.
Well, that's great. And actually, the truth about Indiana is that I have a feeling that the Lilly family has been a great leadership in philanthropy for many, many, many moons. And there is the Center on Philanthropy at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis, which is really quite remarkable. And I knew well the founders of that because I worked, as some of you know, in Indiana, fundraising for a large regional public university campus for almost a full decade. Mm-hmm. Well, that's really quite a statement of scope of community foundations. And it's a little hard to grasp, I think, for most of our listeners as to why I would use a community foundation rather than I would just write a check. So we're going to talk during the course of this program about why, what are the advantages of using a community foundation and how they help donors of even relatively modest means amplify their personal philanthropy and also rationalize it in a way in terms of timing and also making it compatible with their own financial positions, because sometimes it's very useful to a person financially to who has a philanthropic intent to begin with, to work with a community foundation and in partnership with them. So this is really a very important topic. It's not just something that's arcane, but really is relevant to any of us, particularly all of us baby boomers who are a time in our lives when we may have the ability to make gifts that we haven't made before. And frankly, if we're used to taking a lot of trips on vacations, we're probably saving a bundle of money. That we could well think of a charitable use for, especially with the multiple crises that are on upon us. Now, I want to welcome Tom Clark, who is a good friend of ours from the artistic world. And it turns out that Tom Clark is something I didn't know. Tom Clark is a philanthropist, and that's a wonderful thing. A philanthropist is anyone who gives away money, particularly in an intentional way. And I think that it's important for us to think about philanthropy in that frame of mind. This isn't something that's just limited to the Rockefellers. It even includes the Clarks. Good morning, Tom. I'm so glad to have you with us. Thank you for coming.
Good morning, and thanks so much for including me. It's hard to think of myself and my wife, Ruth, as philanthropists, but I guess we are. And we came about it in an interesting way because of what you had mentioned before with the field of interest funds and whatever, and having monies available through our tax preparation people. And we were hearing of these opportunities to give. And Ruth and I had been talking about this for a long time, but all we did was raise more and more and more questions and no answers. But finally, we had the courage to call the Kenosha Community Foundation, make an appointment. And at that time, the director was Bob Schneider. And we went in to talk to him to see if he could answer some of our questions. And lo and behold, we left there having established the Clark Barber Fund using my last name and my wife's maiden name. And it was small at first, but it was nice. And then over the course of the next 2 years, we added considerably more to it. And that was helpful, and other people added to it as well. And then we spoke, but Bob Schneider answered all of our questions that day. And it was just so comfortable. And it was a good fit for us. Mm-hmm. Because both Ruth and I are retired educators. She was a middle school librarian for many, many years. I am a retired teacher, mostly for over 26 years as a kindergarten teacher. And when we retired, we really wanted to continue somehow that focus on children. And we were always interested in the arts and in nature. We were one of the first members of the Friends of Hawthorne Hollow, for example, years ago, and so on. So this really, this opportunity to create a fund for granting to fund projects within the community that would directly relate to children and their families was exciting to us. It really was. But we weren't sure if those diverse interests of ours would really fit the foundation. And those diverse interests, meaning the arts and nature education and so on. But then entered Tom Targos, who was another member of the staff at the foundation. And he too had a family fund that's called the Kabaskowitz Fund, named in honor of his mother's family. And when we started talking with him, sparks flew, because it was like, he said, oh yes, the arts, and oh yes, the nature education. And so he ended up combining forces with us to make what we call the CBK Fund, which really is Clark Barber Kabaskowitz, but we renamed it Creativity by Kids, and children of all ages, or kids of all ages. And so that's really how it evolved. And it was an absolutely exciting, reassuring process for my wife and I to do that.
That's a wonderful, exciting story. I can sense in your voice the passion you bring to this, Tom. And I have the same passion for the philanthropies that I support. You either do or you don't. And why not to get involved with something that you're passionate about, right? Now, exactly. Our listeners are wondering. So these school teachers found an oil well in their backyard, and this. Now, I don't want to pry, but I want to disabuse people of the notion that, you know, unless you're fabulously wealthy, this is not for you, because that's really not quite true, is it? Or do you have an oil well?
No oil well.
Because I have a big backyard.
I have butterflies in my backyard, no oil wells. But what we used were the required minimum distributions. We started out, as I mentioned, really small the first year, and increased that as we went along, and then had other contributions as well. So we're at the point now where this past year we were able to give our first CBK grants, mini grants, we call them, because they're $500 to $1,000 to support programming within community organizations. And we had a marvelous response. There were 17 not-for-profit organizations that submitted grant requests. And we were able to give four grants of $1,000. Actually, $2,500 came from our CBK grant agency, and then the rest of the money was donated by other people within the foundation.
How much more fun is it to give money away while you're alive instead of afterwards? How much more fun is that?
It's stunning. It's wonderful. It's really exciting. It truly is. It's a marvelous feeling, and one that makes us want to reach out and encourage other people to do the same thing, because it is, it's a marvelous experience. And it just, I don't know how to express it any other way, but it is a marvelous thing. And we really were pleased with the process, because ours is a field of interest fund. Ruth and I are not the people that make the choices for the funds. We have to have a committee. We had a committee of three people who chose the recipients. And that was fascinating to me. And really, at first, I was disappointed that I couldn't make the choices. And then after the process was done, it was thrilling to see how these three people from the community made those choices and calculated the impact of those. And I don't know if you've followed in the newspaper, but one of those recently has been up and in operation at Hawthorne Hollow. Mm-hmm. And it was one that got funded through the Kenosha Public Library, but it was going to be positioned at Hawthorne Hollow. Now, Hawthorne Hollow also got a grant from us as well for another activity. But the one that has been up and running is a children's picture book walk through a trail in Hawthorne Hollow. It is absolutely delightful. And to go there and see it and know that a couple of your dollars helped that, it's absolutely thrilling. It truly is.
I believe you. On Community Matters this morning, our guests are talking about Community Foundation Week in Southeast Wisconsin, and we've just been listening to Tom Clark, who has established a donor-advised fund there, and he is just thrilled to death. It's actually a family of fund, and he advised them when they set it up as to what it should focus on in terms of general ideas. Also with us is Ken Fellman, the president of the board of directors of the Kenosha Community Foundation, and its interim executive director, Jane Harrington Heide. Before we go any further, you know, Ken, Tom has referenced Robert Schneider, your immediate past executive director. I've known Bob ever since he took that role. I've been back in town for over 20 years now, and I thought that he did an exceptional job with the foundation. I just wonder if you would like to take a moment to offer your evaluation of how the foundation has, in my professional opinion, truly matured and is now ready for the official second decade of the 21st century.
Well, Len, thanks again for the opportunity to be here on your program today. And I just have to say, I liked the way you referenced Bob and your comment there, that he had done an exceptional job. And I would tell you from my perspective and from the board, that statement's absolutely solid. It's spot on. You know, Bob joined the foundation as executive director in 2008. And I would say from the day he began, he embraced our mission and he absolutely made it his own every single day. And the best way I could describe this, and all this led to our success, is Bob was always on. And if you know Bob, as a result, like I know him, you would know about the foundation. He was always on. He couldn't help himself. And truly, to make this point, one of Bob's great strengths that helped us grow is that he is a fantastic storyteller. And whenever he had an opportunity to tell the story about the foundation, if we put him in front of a crowd, if he was out socially, if you run into him at the coffee shop, somehow he would find a way to bring up the foundation. And from my standpoint, as president, I've worked with Bob closely for all that time. And I just came to understand whenever I met with Bob, I knew that I would get some story about a donor he'd been cultivating, a community project he was working on, a not-for-profit that he was helping out, organize some new event and promotion. And, you know, it's really the storytelling and his passion that made the difference. And so I'll share just a couple numbers, but I do think we owe a lot to Bob. And when he joined us, the foundation's assets were just under $3 million in 2008. We're pushing $12 million, actually. Today, and that's a 350% increase. And, you know, those are just the numbers. But along the way, I think that Bob did a lot of work. Certainly we have a good board that does it, but Bob is a face of the foundation, the community. And the fact that we were able to grow and have so many additional funds established, Tom, your story, I've heard that multiple times. How, you know, he's engaged, people come, they ask questions. And I think Bob did it in a way that was foundation focused and not about himself. He's a humble guy, and a lot of people said yes to working with the foundation with Bob.
That sure is correct. And we have a wonderful staff working there with you too, because I've experienced them in numerous personal and professional settings over the years. And you're right. I never felt that Bob was selling me. There's an old-fashioned expression that he or she is comfortable as an old shoe, and that kind of applied to Bob. You felt comfortable with him. You could share anything with him, and you never felt he would be judgmental. You knew he was just a solid person who was really motivated by the community and community service. That's so true.
Absolutely. You know, I want to comment on staff as well. This is tagging on a little bit to what Tom had talked about, but just this past year, my wife and I, through a variety of things in our lives, we found ourselves in a position where we were able to establish a scholarship fund at the foundation as well. And the reason I bring this up, my experience as a donor, I got to tell you, my friends, it's very different than when you're sitting on the board. I mean, I learned more things about how to make the sausage and how to get this done. And I just have to pay a compliment here on the program to Tom Targus on our staff, because my wife and I came into this. You know, we had all these ideas, what we wanted to do. At the end of the day, I mean, we were like right down the middle. We had it all figured out. You know, we wanted to do something for kids graduating from Bradford High School. I've had four of them. We wanted to make sure that it would take help with scholarships to UW-Madison for kids who were in the engineering program. We wanted to just do it for kids that were in cross-country program, because all our boys ran through that at Bradford. And Tom's wisdom was, hey, you know, that's all good. Don't be so restrictive, because you're not going to cast the wider net. You're not going to give as many opportunities. And, you know, he was absolutely right. And
it would be hard to spend the money if you were that restrictive. I used to coach people on scholarship giving at universities for most of my life. And that's an important conversation to have, because I've had to administer scholarships that were restricted to the members of a certain country church in a tiny rural town that hardly exists anymore. And that's a shame to have the money tied up that way.
Right. Well, and I thank Tom for helping us get there. The other thing I just want to add to the conversation is part of our motivation, and I hear this from a lot of people, I was raised to believe in giving time, talent, and treasure, right? And when I was finding myself in a position where we could do this, it was about that. It's about a long-term impact. And frankly, it was also about positioning my four boys as an example of how we can do this in a long-term, meaningful way. And so I just wanted to offer that up as just another donor's experience and motivation. Back to Bob, I talked about the growth in the foundation. There are some things that I think are perhaps more visible in our community than others, but a little bit about impact. Last year, we distributed over $800,000 in grants and sponsorships in the community. And we were also able to give over $100,000 of scholarships to 43 Kenosha County students that are going on to education. And that's a big impact for people. And Tom, you mentioned it makes you smile. I mean, you see the programs or the walk over at Hawthorne Hollow, the story walk. I've seen that. I've seen kids over there with their parents. And what better summer than this one to fund a program that does that? Fantastic.
Now, yeah. Ken, you get a lot of thank you letters from those kids who get scholarships, and they're not all kids. Some of them are very definitely adults, and that's another part of our scholarship giving these days. We hate to restrict things to just a certain age. Tell us what kind of letters you get. I understand you have one that you've gotten that we could read for our listeners that's particularly touching. I wonder if you would share that with us now.
Yeah, thank you. You know, we do get a lot of letters and thank yous. And when you sit around the table and you hear these, it's kind of like what you were saying, that it motivates everybody just to want to give more money and help. And so here's a story that comes from one of our recipients. And I'll just like to read through this for people because it's you can tell it's right from the heart, and it does a much better storytelling than I could on my own. So here, dear Kenosha Community Foundation and Gunlock family, I'm writing as a 2019 recipient of the Gunlock Family Scholarship. I would like to thank the Kenosha Community Foundation for selecting me to be the recipient of this wonderful scholarship. I would also like to thank the Gunlock family for their overwhelming generosity, providing the funds and the opportunity for me to receive the scholarship. Being a minority student with a less than stellar GPA in high school, it was nearly impossible for me to find scholarships that I qualified for. Too frequently do scholarships use GPA as the sole determinant in whether or not a student qualifies, without taking into account the potential and capability of the student as a whole. The Gunlock Family Scholarship, in its benevolent approach, has allowed me and countless students like me the opportunity to flourish in higher education without cumbersome financial burden. It allowed me to fully focus on academics this past year without stressing about finances, and I'm proud to say that I earned a 3.5 GPA last semester, despite all the challenges posed by the COVID-19 pandemic in the semester's latter half. Once again, I thank the Gunlock family and the Kenosha Community Foundation for providing me with this wonderful opportunity, and look forward to the rest of my academic career. I will use the momentum of the running start the Gunlock Family Scholarship provided me to go forward and continue doing great things.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really, that's inspiring. And that's exactly what we want to be doing. You know, Jane, operationally, there's a very interesting thing that she highlighted in her letter, and that is that GPA thing. Do you want to talk a little bit?
Yes. First of all, the funds were established by Herman and Virginia Gundlach. And Herman was a CPA in Kenosha, actually the first CPA in Kenosha. And Tom Clark, he had a connection also with Hawthorne Hollow. Herman and Virginia felt very strongly about providing funds for educational purposes, particularly for that first year of college. But interestingly enough, they wanted to build in a scholarship that could provide for students that had lower GPAs than the average scholarship recipients. Therefore, as he addressed in his letter, the scholarship fund considers scholarships for students with a 2.5 to a less than 3.2 GPA for studies beyond high school. And this is an astounding number. The fund was established in 1996. To date, they have given out $350,000 of scholarship monies just from this single fund. Astounding.
Yes, and that group is a group that is often very, very hard to find a financial help for beyond government grants and loans. And providing that running start is really important. And I think I just want to point out that if people are having a heightened consciousness about social justice today, and I hope you do, mm-hmm. listeners, this is drives right to that pitch point. Right, Ken?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to talk about Community Foundation Week, since we need to really take a deeper bow to Community Foundation Week that we're right in the midst of right now. It just started a couple days ago. Do you want to, Jane, would you talk us through a little bit about what's going on in Community Foundation Week? From looking at the internet, it seems to me that you're more active than the other community foundations around here. And I do want our listeners to know that within the signal area of this radio station, we have the Racine Community Foundation, the Whitewater Community Foundation, the Community Foundation of Southern Wisconsin, the Bigfoot Community Fine Arts Foundation, and the Walworth County Community Foundation. So wherever you live, everything we're talking about today is relevant to you. And even if you're listening on the internet on the other side of the country, it's probably not, you can't go very far without running into a community foundation these days, because it's the best thing since sliced bread in the philanthropy field. Jane, tell us what's going on in Foundation Week here in Kenosha.
Yes, outside of being in the midst of a pandemic, we have quite a few virtual offerings that we have available. The first of which is a courageous conversation, which will build itself about the topic of building diversity in local government. And this issue has been coming up a lot in the public conversation since we've experienced civil unrest in our community about minority and female representation in elected office. The discussion is going to be organized by the Coalition for Dismantling Racism and will feature several past, present, and future candidates for local political office, and they'll be sharing their experiences. That will be run probably about 90 minutes to 2 hours. Second is a virtual performance by the Fleeing Artists, which happened to be, we provide a fiscal sponsorship for that group. And they will be performing Master Harold and the Boys by South African playwright Ethel Fugard. And that'll be performed November 13th, 14th, and 15th on our social media platforms. And that was made possible through support from one of our funds, TST Donor Advised. Next is sponsorship for Wisconsin Prints 2 Virtual and Curbside Exhibition. And that runs through the month of November. And that is organized, again, by a grant recipient of the foundation, Anchor Press Paper and Print. And that is going to be exhibited on a wall, and it's called Walk, Bike, or Drive-By Gallery at 5603 7th Avenue. Next, we have a nod to the 100th anniversary or centennial of the 19th Amendment, Women's Right to Vote. There is a We Vote exhibit that was a collaborative effort by Lemon Street Gallery and the Kenosha Public Library. Tom Clark had some input on this in that he supplied the raw materials for this exhibit, which are old library card catalogs. And I believe it's an 18 or 19 artists. It created some theme related to suffrage on these items. And then the Women's Fund has decided that we will award monetary prizes for first, second, and third amongst the artist exhibitors. And that will be on display in November at the Northside Library. Next, we have a release of an aerial drone exhibit of our sculpture walk, which is now in mid-year of its biennial sighting. And that was done by a Kenosha News reporter, Kevin Poirier, and that project was funded by the Kenosha Arts Fund. Next, we'll have a needs assessment for not-for-profit organizations. Just because of the impact of the pandemic, we feel that there may be several special needs in the community in the coming years or so, and hopefully that will be borne out by that assessment survey. And lastly, we will make available our special thank you to Robert Schneider as our executive director. We had put together a wonderful book commemorating Bob and his years here with photos, and that will be available through our Facebook page.
Well, let me remind our listeners that we are pre-recording this program on October 21st, so I urge you to check the events listing on the Kenosha Community Foundation webpage and in the media outlets to make sure that any of these dates haven't changed before broadcast. Now, I wonder if we could hear a little bit from you, Ken, in some of the moments we have left. How gifts can be made to the Community Foundation. And first of all, how do we contact you? You have a website which has a lot of information. Give us your URL and your phone number, because those are important things our listeners want to have.
Absolutely, Len. So it's pretty easy. It's www.kenoshafoundation.org. That'll get you to our website. And the phone number is 262-654-2412. Now, as far as the donations, Len, our website is a great source of information on this. We've got various tabs you can look at in terms of how to get in touch, how the different funds that you can establish, and how to make donations. But I will tell you, it's really quite easy. People can give right online to any of the specific funds that are listed there. And, you know, through PayPal or credit card usage, they can do that right online. And then, as we heard from Tom, our other guest here today, you know, it can just start as simple as making a call. And we can walk people through it. But, you know, for donations, we get it all kinds. I mean, cash, you know, checks, stock is certainly something to consider if you're looking at making a donation. And there are some tax advantages, or could be, if you do it that way. And so, you know, we
appreciated securities are particularly good for that.
Absolutely. And, you know, we would always say check with your financial advisor, you know, or your accountant for that. But we get that quite often. And people can also give real estate. And people many times would put us in their estate plans and when they're establishing those. So truly, it starts with becoming aware and, you know, asking what's possible. But we would make it as easy as anybody wants it to be to get money over to us.
Oh, that's for sure. And I want to remind people they need to talk to their CPAs and tax advisors about some special things because of 2020, because of the pandemic. There's some special things that aren't going to happen again, I dearly hope, that are advantages to people who have a charitable intent. Everybody gets a $300 charitable deduction allowed for those not itemizing. And you can usually make charitable gifts up to 60% of your adjustable gross income. This year, you can make gifts up to 100% of your adjusted gross income, and you get a five-year carryover. So you can reduce your tax bill by a whopping amount if you have the opportunity to do that. That doesn't apply to everybody, but the $300 thing does. And we already mentioned talking to your advisors about appreciated securities. That could be a really good idea for you. And there are a lot of advantages to working with the Community Foundation, and you've listed some of them. You can establish some funds where you can be hands-off, but direct their general direction and know that the foundation will assemble a panel of experts to administer it, because administering it is no fun. Starting your own family foundation separately is fun until you have to figure out how to do the paperwork and the annual tax returns. Then it becomes less interesting. Trust me, I've advised a lot of people and worked with a lot of donors over my lifetime, and they quickly find that out. And there are other things that you can ask your advisors about, like charitable gift annuities and bequests from an individual retirement account. Most people aren't aware that if you gift at death and make a beneficiary of your IRA, your children or your grandchildren, they're going to pay taxes on that. It's called IRD, a scary Halloween monster that's still left over, income in respect of a decedent. And but you can give it all 100% to charity and your appreciated security. They get to take it all. They get the appreciation. They don't have to pay capital gains tax. So why am I saying this? It's just that I want people to know that you have to ask the right questions of your CPA and your tax advisors to let them know that you have an interest, and they can tell you the details and whether you qualify or not. But these are things that are available to you, and there are many people with charitable intent who just don't know how to do it, because Why exactly. should you? This isn't something they teach in high school, and it is a bit arcane, believe me. But the basics are really, really simple, isn't that right, Ken?
Absolutely, that's well stated, Len.
Well, as I often do toward the end of a program, I want to ask each one of you in just a moment to tell me what is your hope for the future. Ken, what's your hope for the future for the foundation in the next year or two?
Well, there's three things I'd like to share, Len, that are on my mind here. The first one is my hope is that we can continue to grow both the amounts of grants and the scholarships we distribute every year. And everything aligns to say that will continue to happen. But, you know, that's why we're here. And that's what gives us the chance to make a positive impact in our community. Number two, I think like all of us, we're looking forward to when we can safely be back together in person with whether it be an event that we're helping sponsor or meeting with donors, making a presentation, partnering with a nonprofit. You know, the environment today is a bit restrictive. And so, you know, all together, we are looking forward to that. And so certainly hope and pray for everybody's health and as we work through this situation. And then, you know, the last thing I guess would be in our future this next year, because of the uncertainty in COVID and being in person with others, we're continuing to look for other ways to reach out to individuals and share our story, provide education. And, you know, I'm thankful that we have this technology that we can see people through, you know, choose your video platform of choice, right? Zoom, FaceTime, Skype, you know, but we're going to leverage that technology and hopefully find ways to continue to promote our mission and do the outreach that helps make a difference.
And you're going to fill the position, but never the shoes of Robert Schneider.
Absolutely. You know, we'll get to that at some point. I would tell you, we are very fortunate to have Jane serving as our interim director. I've had the pleasure of being on the board with Jane for many years, and it's fantastic that she had the interest and was gracious enough to say that she would serve us in this capacity. And so today, that's our current plan. We're going to continue working together. Jane, you know, I think Jane gets the short straw because she has to work with me more often because, you know, we are in touch quite a bit. But it's been a pleasure to work with you, Jane. And, you know, as timing will take us to that in the future.
Well, I can tell you that I personally was and professionally was relieved to know that Jane was ready to step right into to behind the desk. And I thought that was a wonderful thing for the community. I truly, truly do. Tom, what's your hope for the fund? And I'm not going to try to remember the name now. I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's a Clark Barber, but CBK is what we call it. And certainly we want it to continue to grow and create or support programs that create interest in the arts and nature programming throughout different parts of our Kenosha community, not only for children, but as we say, for children of all ages. And so what's interesting is the timing, because this week the applications are open for the Kenosha Community Fund applications are open for a CBK grants for next year. So we're starting the process and very excited about that.
That's great. And Jane, what about you? And remind me of that URL to get in contact with you all and your phone number, please, Jane.
Okay. First, that information, www.kenoshafoundation.org, and the phone number 262-654-2412. And Len, I'm just going to go respond to your query about the go forward, and I'm taking a long view. So that's 2020 and beyond. At the foundation, we don't think about the next election or the next business cycle. We think about the next generation and the next after that, after that, after that. And to give everybody an opportunity to be a philanthropist by setting up an endowment fund. Very quickly, you can think of it as whatever you contribute, each year you would grant up to 5% of that to not-for-profits. Depending on the growth of your endowment, every 15 to 20 years, you're going to be making the same gift every 20 years.
So. That's terrific. Thank you so much, Jane Harrington Heide, the interim executive director of the Kenosha Community Foundation, to Tom Clark, a very thoughtful donor, and to Ken Fellman, president of the board of directors. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta urging you to get informed about your community foundation, to take advantage of the special tax laws for 2020 charitable giving to your community-based not-for-profit organization.